This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right, so the college savant is not with us today. This is the Bob Ryan podcast. We're not even going to mention he who shall not be named. We're not going to mention his name. The other guy who's usually here.
That's right.
Who's in Texas, wherever the hell he is.
Busy man.
Yes, Jeff Goodman is a busy man. And this portion of the program is brought to you by Bet Online. There may be less football being played, but Bet Online has way more stuff to bet in this playoff season. From scores, totals, player performance, props, to where the next fired coach is going to land. Bob, you can bet on anything at Bet Online, the number one spot for all things NFL in betting. And not just football, BetOnline is baseball, hockey, boxing, and UFC. They've got all the odds. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports and play your favorite games. BetOnline, where the game starts. Bob Ryan, I love the Phoenix Suns. I love the Phoenix Suns. And my question for you to kick things off is, while they were in the finals, are they considered a true contender when they play in the West with Golden State?
Positively. As we speak, they're on a 12-game winning streak. They've already had an 18-game winning streak. I don't know how much more people need to see. You realize that in the year 2022, they're a legitimate contender, one of the two top contenders to win the championship in the West. And that presupposes that everybody's healthy, but it presupposes that the things that Golden State's counting on, such as Klay Thompson rounding back to about 80% of his old self, and they have Draymond Green, who's extremely important, is there. By the way, I got to throw, I know you've thought, all right, we'll get to the Warriors. I love the Suns as you do. You know, Ayton won me over last year. I wasn't ready to like him as much as I do. Booker is just a stud. He's completely, you know, anytime he gets 35, you're not surprised. They still got Chris Paul. He's still got something left in the tank. Bridges, of course. You know, there's a lot to like about that team.
You know, while the Suns, you know, are flourishing, then you look at the Nets and, you know, in the past, we thought with the Nets, okay, they get healthy for the playoffs, they can make a run.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just beginning to wonder if it's going to work out. They've dropped the two in a row at the time of this tape, and they lost to the Kings. And Harden is a shell of himself. Durant is still not playing. And Kyrie, I mean, if you're on the road, he can play.
He puts up numbers. He's walked right back in playing as if nothing ever happened in terms of his actual play, it seems to me. But it's the most bizarre circumstance, I think, in any major American sport we've ever known. A serious question has been posed, and it can't be answered, but it's been posed. Would they prefer to have a seventh game on the road? And the answer is, you know, in any series. I mean, and the answer has to be yes.
Yes.
Because that's the only time he plays, unless something changes between now and then. It's just, I can't deal with it. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around the idea that what's going on, the way he's adapting, you know, playing this season or not playing.
I just look at that team and I just think they're cursed. You know, we thought it was going to be an automatic. It's going to be the Warriors or it's going to be the Lakers and the Nets for the next 5 years. And man, they are just cursed.
Well, you know, they came so close last year. And all kidding aside, this is not a joke. This is, I mean, people make jokes. I mean, we say it because it's true. If Kevin Durant's foot was 1 inch shorter, they win last year.
Yeah.
That foot on the line. And, you know, they probably would have won. And
yeah, I feel bad about Durant because I thought last year in a losing effort was one of the most singular. Prolific is probably over, but I thought it was fantastic. I thought his effort in a losing cause was just, I'm like, look, Durant, you're grouchy, but God, can that kid ball?
Oh, he's good. I mean, he's a top 10 all-time player now, Durant. And
no question.
No, yeah. He's just a scary talent. And at the peak of his game at 33 still, but he's got to be out there, you know. But that's always the case in sports, you know, to get people have to be out there. We knew from the start of the season with the Lakers that with all those old guys, somebody's going to get hurt, a lot of them.
Right. Well, the Sixers won the other night without Joel Embiid. Doc seems to have turned things around. So are they legit now? Are they a threat?
I think they've stepped up. We've gone through a Chicago phase in terms of who's a contender. And when they're fully healthy, they're not healthy now. They don't have Lonzo. Haven't had him. We'll see what happens. But I like the Sixers. By the way, I was a charter member of the Tyrese Maxey fan club at Kentucky. I liked him, saw him, and liked him. And I'm so glad that they're doing what they're doing without you know who. I won't mention the man, a name whose name I will not mention, but he's 6'9".
And here we know.
44% free throw line last year, and you have to take him out of playoff games in the end because he doesn't want to get fouled, and he wouldn't shoot the ball. That guy, there's a guy like that, and he's not playing because he's not happy with the circumstance in Philadelphia. So I'm so happy that they're doing what they're doing without him. Now, question: it's been, and I'll jump, I'll sign on to this course. Okay, Daryl Morey, get something.
Right.
Get something to help your team. I mean, you have a shot here. You can improve your team. Don't be greedy. Get something. I don't care.
Well, the East is wide open. It's wide open. Now, I look at Milwaukee and I think, okay, you've got the freak, so he's the consistent element. But it's wide open because you don't know what's going to happen with Brooklyn.
No,
Chicago, you just may raise the issues. The thing is flipping wide open.
And by the way, if Miami gets healthy, at the right time, they were in that discussion.
So right.
Because that was not the Miami team that they should have. No, but Philly is in this discussion now, I think. Embiid, oh my God, the number he's having, everybody said MVP, he's having a phenomenal year. And I'm very nice that they could win a game without him. I know one team that can't handle him. He plays in Boston at TD Garden.
Yeah.
He kills them. They can't deal with him right now. Once upon a time, they thought Horford is there, but no, they can't deal with him.
Well, what frustrates me is when people say there aren't, the league isn't about the big man anymore. I go, well, no, when you get a good big man, there is.
See, I've been saying that. If the right guy shows up, it's not about the conventional big man except when it is.
right.
It's true. He can play the old-fashioned power post game, and he can step out and, he's a modern, very much a modern guy, as of course is Jokic and a few others of those European big men. But Embiid, he's a scary dude, that guy.
Bob, are you ready for the Ryan Five?
Sure. Well, kind of. Maybe four out of five, but nothing.
Okay. No, the first one is best quote. And what I mean by that is not the actual quote, but the player, when you would go into a locker room, you would go, that's my guy.
There's one guy that in my time, from 69 until retirement, 2012, official retirement, there's only one guy I labeled as the conscience of the team at the particular point in time when he played for that team. And that was Paul Silas. He was a candor, just insight, fearlessness, Paul Silas would be. Now, there are other fun – Kevin McHale was relentlessly quotable. And the thing I always thought was fun for us as writers about McHale is that he'd come up with these analogies and metaphors, and they always were right. They weren't stupid. Other people try, and they failed. He didn't fail. He got it right. He got the metaphor right. He got the simile right. He was amazing. He was fun. But Paul Silas would be my guy as the unfailing. Now, as John Havlicek, it's funny because as time went on, he got more and more, I don't know how to call it, mirthful. He loosened up more and more. There, he was a a much more a sort of uninhibited, fun-loving guy by the time he retired than he was when I first encountered him in 1969. But Silas was unquestionably the most forthright person that I dealt with.
Well, you know, 17 is my favorite number for a reason. I mean, John Havlicek always, it was the greatest thrill of my life. And after being in sports for a long time, you know, meeting athletes, it never is a big deal. I mean, I just like you meet guys and you're like, oh, you know, whatever. But Havlicek was always special to me. And the one thing, Tommy always told the story about how John was wrong so tight. He had to have like wooden hangers or something in his locker. And they had to be just so.
Well, my favorite, my recollection is not the hanger, not the hangers so much, but I, in general terms, I wrote and said that his locker looked like the general was coming for inspection.
Right.
And he arranged his cologne bottles and stuff in ascending height left to right.
Yeah.
But the coup, when he would wear executive socks, you know, knee length socks,
yeah,
he would take them off and hang them over. Hang him up.
That's him.
And drape him over the bar. So, yeah, he was very meticulous. And
Silas, I love the Silas point because I just remember him at 6'5", and the guy, I think he led the league in offensive rebounding one year at 6'5".
Well, he's 6'7".
Oh, is he? Oh, 6'7"?
But no, offensive rebound was a particular forte of his. He had a science about it. There's no question. He was the reigning offensive rebounder in the league. In the late 60s, early 70s, right. By the way, just with just a little extension here, the first I did a detour on a Celtic trip back in 1975, and went to a couple of ABA games out west when I had nights off, one of them was in Denver, and I walk in, and I think it may have been Utah, doesn't matter. They were playing Denver, and I knew Larry Brown, and I'm talking to Larry, and he's telling me that Moses Malone, this is the rookie, right, directly out of Petersburg, Virginia then. Moses Malone, he says, the best offensive rebounder I've ever seen in my life. And I said, Larry, better than Paul Silas? And he said, yes. And, you know, and of course, offensive rebounding was forever a forte of his. But anyway, Silas was an offensive rebounder. He once showed me something. He had a little technique where he said he would run out of, like, say, picture the basket, and he's on the left side, okay? And he would run out of bounds and then come in and nudge out
right
position on the other side to block out a guy. And, you know, how cool is that?
It's smart. Yeah, you got
probably it. One other thing, too. When teams remember a thing that, I mean, this is really dating us, Derek. Remember a thing called the fast break? Remember that? Yes. Was organized and had an outlet pass and had a wingman and had wingmen and a trailer. You know, he showed me that he not every basket, I mean, every shot naturally, but he could angle himself so he would get the offensive rebound and immediately propel himself with two fast dribbles to the free throw line and then pass the ball off to you know, well, the guy was a thinker.
Yeah, and that's why he was like one of how many of Red's players that became coaches? You know, they all became coaches.
Oh, God, so many.
Best dressed.
You know, the chief was good. Robert was impeccably dressed.
What about Clyde Frazier, man?
Oh, you mean, I'm talking about Celtics.
Anybody.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. Well, of course he was in his time. The man, Michael always dressed very impeccably. Jordan, that's a very good one. But yeah, Clyde Frazier was the fashion maven of all. Now, a lot of guys have modern guys dress very creatively, wow. but Frazier was probably the gold star winner.
Well, I just remember Antoine Walker had a new suit for every game.
Wow, that's a lot. That's it. And I think Allen Iverson had a new sweatshirt maybe for every game or something.
Yeah, and that's and I think that's why poor Antoine went broke. Okay, yeah, these are for anybody, Bob, in your career.
Okay.
Most, you know, when I say most underrated, most unappreciated, most underrated player.
Well, I think as history goes on now, I'll put it this way. The most forgotten great player was Andrew Toney. And he was a comet that flashed across the sky. And his career ended prematurely due to not one but two bad feet, two irresolvable issues with his feet. He was probably only about 26 or so, I'm guessing. But at his peak, he was frightening. There was nothing he could. He was the most. I call him the most contemptuous guard I ever saw. I mean, he laughed at double teams, you know, and they were like a joke to him. But he could. He is now been forgotten. I'm trying to think though. In this time, I'd have to dwell on that a little bit. That who during the time was underrated, but as time has gone on, he's the most forgotten great player in NBA history.
I always thought Connie Hawkins didn't get his due.
Did you like the Hawk? The Hawk. Hawk was, you know, his first year in the league, he was all league, first team. And Hawk gave it to you when he wanted to give it to you.
Oh, okay.
And Joe Gilmartin, the great writer in Phoenix, used to talk about Hawk as a portrait in still life at times, I think, you know. But, you know, obviously he was a very gifted guy and a very intriguing guy. And is a, you know, or has a place in history naturally due to it. What happened to him and you know why he was not in the NBA for all those years.
Now, this is my favorite question. The next two are my favorite questions. Best assistant coach.
Oh, that's easy. Yeah. They each had and it's Johnny Bock with the Bulls.
The Bulls
was the for sure. We had the other guy. And he was the living proof of one of my favorite sports axioms is that not every lieutenant is cut out to be a general. Jimmy Rogers.
Yeah.
Jimmy Rogers was a great assistant coach. And you know, he got handed the Celtics because he got a raw deal. He gets the Celtics and Larry goes out for the year.
Right.
That isn't good. And then the next year, Larry wasn't happy the way he was being used, I guess, the second time. Yeah. But anyway, Jimmy Rogers is an easy call there. I'll tell you who my favorite was to talk to. You know, he was my go-to guy on that particular team, getting insight and getting quips. And that was Dave Wohl when he was with the Lakers.
Center guy. I used to see him at the market.
Penn guy, you know. But I'll never forget, I had it was probably in his teenage years. My son at the time with me one night, and we were before the game, and we're talking to Dave Wohl, and he's talking about synapses, and Michael Jordan had faster synapses than anybody else he had seen, you know, and you know, my son was like very impressed. this coach was using the word synapse, you know. But he was fun. He never got a head coaching job, did he?
It was strange. You know, it's interesting. I don't want to speak for him. I don't know. I used to see him literally at the market, and we would. And if I saw him, it was 30 minutes in the bread aisle because he had watched every game the night before. And he, you know, the thing that's really, like, it's great talking to you, Bob. I mean, I could listen to you talk all day long. We know that. But when you talk to a guy like Wohl, or even John Carroll, for that matter, these guys, and you sit there and like you listen to them break down the game, and you're just like, you're mesmerized. Yeah, you're just like, you're just mesmerized. I mean, they break down every play the way a golfer breaks down.
You know, when I did my book 48 Minutes with Terry Pluto, which was about one game in the NBA, January 16th, 1987, the Cavaliers at the Celtics, every minute detail of the game and portraits of the players I sat and watched the game on tape with Jimmy Rogers and he broke it down for me. And it was phenomenal.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's at another level. Best. I think I know the answer to this. And I'm going to, you can give a Boston one, but then you have to give one on the road. But I think I know the answer. Best game day bar.
Major Goolsby's in Milwaukee.
Johnson. I knew it. I knew it.
Major Goolsby's in Milwaukee. What I loved was in Denver called Duffy's. And that was downtown. I like that. I'm trying to think now. Let me think. Now in New York, there were Runyons in New York, of course, in its highlight, in its heyday, which was lasted for about 20 years. Originally on 50th Street and then later on 2nd Avenue around the corner, for sure. But that Denver one was underrated, Duffy's, but Major Goolsby's was, you know, that fondness. So many of us have a fondness. The 1974 finals, where that was the social center of the whole finals. It was great. In fact, we got to the point where and the off day press conferences. They figured everybody was hanging out at Goolsbee's, so they had it there at a conference room. Yeah, you know, and God love Goolsbee's. Good cheeseburger too. But that would be my all-time favorite NBA bar.
The fact that they had a press conference at a bar is just...
That was the NBA of, you know, of accessibility, and we're all in this together. It was a giant fraternity. I'll tell you my favorite anecdote of the time. This is when we were no charters. Everybody was flying commercial. And the Celtics were flying east to west. And we got to Chicago. We had to change planes. We didn't even have a direct flight. And we had time to kill, and we're walking down to the bar. I mean, everybody, and we saw these very large people coming up against us the other way. And it was the Phoenix Suns. They were going west to east, and everybody got together in the bar, both teams, coaches, broadcasters, you know, writers. It was a little fraternity meeting at the NBA. You know, that spoke to the times.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Bob, I could listen to Bob Ryan stories all day. Also, pick up Scribe if you guys have, and if you guys are new to the podcast. Bob, thank you, my friend. We'll see if Mr. Goodman has time for us next week.
A busy fellow, but he'll do his best.
He'll do his best.